From the Land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 11th day of December 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vick. She's with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson out of Hollister, Missouri. And then a bit later in the program, we'll discuss what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of Closing Market Report. From Illinois Public Media, it's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I hear the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. December corn today down 5.5 cents. It finished at 357.75. The March at 371.25, 5.75 lower. May corn at 378, down 4.75. And July 4.25 lower at $3.83.75. December contract $3.88, down 3 cents. January bean 7.75 lower. Settlement price there at $8.93.5. The March at 908, down 7.5 cents. And May at 921.75. 7.25 lower. July futures 9.35 down 7. Next year's November 5.75 lower at 9.41. Bean oil futures 24 cents lower at 31.23. The bean meal at 293.30 down $3.60. July soft red winter wheat for the day at $5.26 a bushel down 3.75. July hard red at 4.45.5 down a penny and a half. Live cattle futures in Chicago December contract up 70 cents at $120.57. 7.5 cents per 100 pounds. January feeders at 142.77.5, $1.12.5 higher, and lean hogs on the day at $60.70, up 22.5 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 30 points lower on the day. The dollar down 0.115. The gold at $1,467.60, up $5 even, and crude oil at $58.71 a barrel, down 53 cents. Ethanol about a penny and 6 cents lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel down around 4 cents. And gasoline on the RBOB, 3 lower at $1.62.2 per gallon at the last trade that I'm looking at for the afternoon. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson out of Hollister, Missouri. Hey, Jackie, so glad to have you with us this afternoon. Thanks for being here on this regular Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here.
We'll start in the usual place, those support and resistance levels. Have they changed in the last week?
Some have changed, yes. We've had some pretty tough times going on here. So March corn, we've got support at 361, 325, and $3 even. Resistance, 382, $4, and 418. That remained the same. Support for May, 373, 353, and 349. And then resistance, 384, $4, and 412. On beans, January, support 864, 844, and 829. Resistance, 885, 903, and 920. And we've got March support at 896, 842, and 753. Remember, these are monthly continuous chart numbers. And resistance at 929, 956, and 983.
Yeah, we're coming into the end of the year, and oftentimes there will be some rebalancing of accounts. Did managed money change in any way in the last week?
It actually did change quite a bit. We saw wheat, soft red wheat, go from being 7,000 short to 18,000 long this week. Corn went from 133,000 short to 105,000 short. Beans went from 59,000 short to 64,000 short. So you can see they lifted some corn positions and added a few bean positions. When you look at meal, 46,000 short compared to 33,000 last week, and soy oil long at 83,000 compared to 67,000 last week. So they increased their oil position, you know, and then increased the short position on the beans and on the soy meal. You know, those three just work in sync with each other most of the time. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of that going on in the next couple of weeks. Makes for a very difficult market at times.
Is there a fundamental reason, and I'm going to turn you southward for the moment to Brazil in particular, for this to happen? Because we have, you know, 400 million odd bushels in carry out. Brazil looks like it's going to have just a mondo-sized crop, at least at this time. Argentina is suffering, but I don't know how much that'll matter if Brazil's got a big crop down there. And we saw those numbers come out yesterday from the Brazilian government, too.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, everything's going to come down to they're having adequate rain in Brazil right now, but a lot of the forecasters are saying February could be really dry. And if February's really dry, that could change the entire outlook for that particular crop. They're 93% planted right now. This is the thing that's so interesting down there. If I'd never gone there, I don't think I'd have as good a handle on how big. I mean, it's as big as the U.S. pretty much is what it feels like when you're down there, because the earliest planted beans in Mato Grosso right now are actually flowering, setting pods, and filling pods. So, you know, some of those early beans are going to come off already in early January. And so, you know, they have such a mix down there. But one of their big problems they have is this minimum freight rates. You and I have talked about this over the year. And, you know, the government says it's got to provide a livable, just wage for the truck driver. And, you know, I've got to really question that train of thinking, I guess. And the purchasers of freight say supply and demand and the amount of trucks available in the marketplace should determine the wage, not something they set at a predetermined level. So this is a big mess, because 60% of all the grain in Brazil is carried by truck. So several of those grain companies in the big ag co-ops right now are talking about just purchasing their own trucks and saying, the heck with you guys. And so I think when we look at a big crop like this, yep, we're looking right down the face of it. But at the same time, if they start having truck problems and delivery problems, could change everything, no matter how big the crop is. Now, when we look at Argentina, there's a company called Vicentin, which is one of the largest crushers in Argentina, and they announced this week that they are on the brink of default. They're having a lot of difficulty paying their bills, and they just wanted people to know it's possible the companies that delivered to them are not going to get paid at all. So this, you know, Argentina's got so many problems the way it is, but ultimately what happens to this company is really uncertain, because it isn't just a bean crusher. It has bean crushing plants, meat packing plants, feedlots, cotton facilities, biodiesel, and ethanol plants. So what it looks like is probably going to happen is that the government's going to take it over, since they owe the government about $400 million to government banks. And I, you know, anytime the government takes it over is not necessarily good news for anybody. But it's going to be a very interesting spring as we move forward.
It's already an interesting year. I hope next spring is not as interesting as the last spring.
I hope it's not as interesting here. I can tell you that much.
Yeah,
you're right.
And that is for sure. Since we're in South America, because I want to talk about our export inspections, about sales to China. And then the whole devaluing of the currency thing that the president discussed at one point, and the steel and aluminum tariffs. They all kind of work together, relatively speaking, but I suppose it's really about just do we expect to ship it, and are we shipping it?
Well, we did have some big sales to China today on beans, well, to China and unknown both. On export inspections this week, we saw China take beans out of the Mississippi, the Columbia River, and the Puget Sound. Right now, we've got wheat shipments are up 23% compared to last year. Corn shipments, unfortunately, down 61% to last year. But again, I will take and use the caveat to say, remember, we were really front-end loading. And we've got bean shipments up 10% ahead of last year, where last year we were way behind on bean shipments. So, you know, it's kind of balancing itself out. When you look at the devaluation of the currency, it all works together. There's no question about that. I looked at the crush margins for China, and, you know, that has everything to do with all exports throughout the world. It is based on what the currency is basically doing. And the crush margins right now, with this tariff being lifted at the moment for December, January, February, are just terrific for the U.S. out of the Pacific Northwest and out of the Gulf, much better than out of Brazil and Argentina, much, much better. And so I do expect that we're going to see some, you know, some stronger demand coming out of them just for that reason. And so, you know, I'll be honest with you, Todd. I would have said at 97, the dollar being at 97, we probably wouldn't have hardly been selling anything to anybody. The only thing that's been really in our favor is that a lot of those other currencies did come with us, with the exception of the South American currency. And the South American currency's devaluation basically has been a plus to us because it's made their crop more valuable, and so they're hanging on to it. They're less likely to make a lot of big sales unless they absolutely have to. So it's amazing how it just all fits together like one big puzzle until you're missing one piece.
Well, let's stay with trade for just a moment. We'll get to the WASI numbers, which were released yesterday afternoon, maybe another set of numbers too after that. USMCA, the Democrats came to the podium, said, we've been working with Representative Lighthizer from the Trump administration and the USTR. Along with Mexico, we've managed to come to a compromise deal that allows enforcement, and we want to go forward with the trade deal. I'm surprised before the end of the year they'd like to do that, although Mitch McConnell has said not until after the impeachment process is over. So I suppose we're talking USMCA in 2020 rather than 2019. However, it does keep the corn flowing, I would think, to the number one export market for U.S. corn, which is Mexico.
Right, absolutely. And I've got a blurb from Sonny Perdue, and I couldn't agree with it more. He said, this agreement improves virtually every component of the old NAFTA. The old NAFTA was really not in our favor, and the ag industry stands to gain significantly. He said it's a big win for us, for the U.S. farmer and the rancher, and that's really the truth. We have good friends and, of course, clients up in the Dakotas. And, you know, the things that came across the borders from Canada into the U.S. would have never been able to be sold here in the U.S. The things that came across the border from Mexico into the U.S. under NAFTA would have never passed here in the U.S. So hopefully they've leveled the trading field quite a bit.
And finally, yesterday's numbers from Washington, D.C. We got a couple of sets. I know we've talked about WASDE, but you looked at the FSA figures and there was some confusion. I didn't realize this until you discussed it with me momentarily there about prevented plant acres and those acres which have just been abandoned.
Right, right. There seems to be an ongoing confusion as to how the prevented plant acre number impacts the actual planted acreage number that the USDA puts out. And so I talked to Lance Honig this morning. He's the head of the crops branch for NAS. And I said to him, could you please clarify this so that I can help people better understand what's going on? And so if you look at corn, they reported 11.4 million prevented plant acres, and they said just under 500,000 of failed acres for corn. So when you look at that, a lot of people were saying, wow, that prevented plant number is going to dramatically change the acreage number. Well, one thing Lance said is, and we got to make it really clear, USDA acreage numbers never have any prevented plant numbers in them because it's just a number. It's strictly planted acres. It includes corn acres planted as a cover crop on prevent plant acres because they were planted, okay? Failed acres, which you heard me say was just under 500,000, are acres planted that failed, and they could ultimately reduce harvested acres. So everybody keeps looking at the PP number, the prevented plant number, and thinking that that is going to dramatically impact the acreage number, and that's just not the way it is. So we have to be prepared.
Yeah, the answer is it definitely does not. That the acres that USDA uses for both harvested and planted,
right,
are only acres. If it had corn planted on it, doesn't matter what its use was. Those are the planted acres, and then
right,
through the conversations they have with producers, they figure out whether it was a cover crop or whether it went to silage, and then that's where they back off to the harvested acreages.
Right.
So they are,
right,
any acre that was planted to corn is a planted acre, and that's what the number looks like. But the prevent plant acres don't show up there. That's for darn sure.
No. And some people get really confused by that, Todd. I mean, you know, that's one thing. When you look at corn and you look at overall acres, harvested acres is about anywhere between, you know, 91.5% to 92% of your planted acres. That's because of silage, you know, and everything else. When you look at beans, it's about 98.5% harvested acres versus how many acres are planted. And that's where the difference comes in. You know, there's just so much more involved in the corn side of it. But a lot of people are confused. They keep saying, oh my gosh, this number's going to go down. It's just going to go down. I mean, if they thought that the 11.4 million was on top of the 89 million, you got 100 million acres. There's no way that, you know, that was there. And so thought it would be oh my gosh, we'd all have corn everywhere. But anyway. I just thought it would be a good thing for us to talk about so that nobody gets confused by the fact that they're thinking that this is going to dramatically change things. It's not. It's the only thing that's going to change is failed acres. And, you know, if it's a cover crop, it's certainly not going to be something that's going to be harvested for grain. So,
hey, thanks so much.
Thanks for letting me talk about it.
Yeah.
I appreciate it very, very much.
Not a problem. It was good to talk to you again. You have a great week.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Thank you. I will. That's Jackie Vaick. She's with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson out of Hollister, Missouri, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Look us up. Listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org. You can also find us as a podcast in Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, on Stitcher, SoundCloud, NPR One, and even in Spotify. On this Wednesday, we're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to discuss the weather forecast. Can you, Drew, maybe go through a couple of crops for me, wheat and corn? One that maybe we didn't quite get enough of it in the ground or as much as they wanted. And in part, that probably was because, we had such a wet fall. And we also had the same problem with corn. We have an awful lot of it standing in a great deal of the northern corn belt from North Dakota to Michigan. So what are conditions like?
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting situation. From a wheat perspective, there is certainly a lot of land that didn't get fully planted, and there was quite a bit of it that got planted but didn't get enough warmth and sunshine while we were earlier in the season for that crop to emerge and establish as well as it should have. So we're running a little bit of a higher potential for some damage if we get too cold this winter without snow on the ground. So that's a little bit of an issue coming out of the Central Plains all the way into the soft wheat areas of the lower Midwest. And for that matter, Michigan, of course, has a lot of summer crop that didn't get harvested, so the winter crop didn't get planted either. And on that subject matter, most of that summer corn that's still out there standing from the Dakotas into Michigan and some other areas in the Midwest, it doesn't look real pretty. It's going to be real hard to get the rest of that crop out of there because we're just not going to see prolonged periods of sunny, warm, dry conditions. And we've got a ton of snow on the ground, of course, in the northern plains and upper Midwest, and the odds of getting that off of the fields and get it warm enough to get into the fields and do work is real low until spring. So it's going to be a frustrating winter for a lot of those folks in the north central states.
What do conditions look like just quickly across the Midwest for the next week or so? We'll be going into the holiday, and I'll be traveling across the state of Illinois all next week.
Well, it's all about you, isn't it? we are going to see a couple of weather disturbances move across the heart of the Midwest and the portions of the plains as well. No major big storms are likely, but there will be a couple of moderate-sized events that will lay down snow across the region from the Central Plains into the Southern Great Lakes region with rain to the south. So there will be some issues with travel. I think the first opportunity for snow accumulating in the lower parts of the Midwest will probably be during the early part of next week. And there may be a follow-up system that occurs in the maybe coming close to the week of Christmas. And so those two events could certainly put snow farther to the south. We're also going to have some rain, so the ground's going to be wet in these areas. And outside of that, I think it would just keep the cold and the snow going in the northern parts of the plains and upper Midwest, so their situation will certainly get no better.
You know, it is all about me, actually all about the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. There is a reason, Drew, that those summits are a half day long rather than a full day. In fact, they were a full day event for a very long time, and I don't remember what year it was that this happened. But we're out all 5 days, usually, and it's usually this week before Christmas. Sometimes it's this week as opposed to next, but we're always out. And 1 year, there was an ice storm, I want to say 4 of the 5 afternoons. And in order to get to our next destination, we sped things up and finished at the noon hour. And it seemed to work pretty well, so we just adapted it for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. And so... weather had an impact, and every time we got into space, we were worried the next morning that nobody would show up because the ice storm did come. We'd get back into the hotels, and then we'd have the ice storm. But you know, farmers are pretty resilient. They get in the older four-wheel drive pickup truck, and off they go. So we're looking forward to seeing them next week. We'll talk all about Illinois. You can find all those details on our website. You can walk in at any of those events, by the way. Although, we probably ought to finish up with one of the discussions I know we'll take up during next week's IFAS meetings, and that's the size of the crops in Brazil and Argentina. I take it Brazil's off to a really good start.
Oh, yes. You know, there's so much concern about planting being slow to get started, and it was. But, you know, Brazil's got this beautifully long growing season window, and so they've managed to plant this crop, and the weather has caught on, and we're seeing a regular occurrence of rain and seasonable temperatures. It is an almost perfect environment, and yield potentials are looking higher as every day goes by. You know, the exception is in the Northeast, but that's only going to be a couple percentages of the overall crop, so the bottom line looks like they could be on track for a record production year. But, of course, we're still only halfway through, so we've got a ways to go. But right now I don't see any changes coming up for the next couple of weeks. In Argentina, it's a little different story, more of a struggling growing season. The rains haven't been right on when they needed to be. It's been a little dry at times. The planting pace is definitely behind the usual, and they do need a good drink of water. Temperatures got up over 100 degrees this week. And as we go forward through the coming week, it might cool down a little bit, but there's still no rain in the pipeline for southern parts of that country. So as we go on out deeply into the latter part of December, the timing of rain is going to be critical for some of these southern crops. I think they're going to get some, but I think they'll also be limping along for a while on into the latter part of the month.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking time with me today.
Great. Have a good day. Good week, too.
You too. I will indeed. That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.